Hi, I'm Fred Schonenberg, and thank you for joining me on the Venture Fuel podcast. At Venture Fuel, we help companies find new solutions by partnering with the best startups from around the world. On the show, you'll learn the secrets of business leaders who tap into startups and the founders driving extraordinary results. We'll consider new ideas, stretch our mindsets beyond the status quo, and in the process, discover how to leap the competition and fuel personal growth. On today's show, I'm speaking with Christian Ponce of LogMeIn, where he is a director of corporate strategy and was the head of the Transformation Management Office. He has certificates on disruptive strategy from Harvard and building a capability for breakthrough innovation from Babson. Today, we're going to talk about Christian's path from auditor to program manager to innovator and how he leverages design thinking and lean startup principles to actually love problems and to find solutions that solve users' pains. So let's get after it. Christian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, bro.
Can you tell us a little bit about your career journey?
It's kind of a strange one. I don't know too many people have the same kind of setup, but it really is from auditor through innovator, now in the strategy side, always kind of thinking that way. But to bring it back, I came out of college in 2005, right at the epicenter of what was Sarbanes-Oxley. Right? And for those that don't remember, it's all these rules that require financial officers and executive officers to sign off on their financial statements, which they never had to, and become liable for those as a result of what happened with Enron and Accenture. So most organizations use technology to run their books, but nobody on that side understood what that was. So all of a sudden, there was this big rush from the big four into colleges to say like, oh, you know some technology and you got some kind of business background? Come work with us. And I got thrown into that mix, interned at EY, went to work for KPMG, and it was just kind of grow up as we start to understand stocks. And it was my first taste of coming to a job that's really great and figure out your space and what you want to do with that. Learning controls and learning how that all worked, I really got to understand the ins and outs of processes and breaking those apart. Because as any auditor will tell you, when you go through that process, we end up knowing your business better than you do because we have to ask every question. And I still with that mindset. But as every auditor will tell you, nobody wants to talk to auditors. They're not like the best people when you come into a company. So you got to spend a lot of time getting to know people. And after doing that for a couple of years and living on the road, flying all over the place, I went into industry and said, well, I want to do a switch and started looking at program management or the project management of the world and delivering things. In that mix, it was just what came out next after SOX. It was PCI, it was HIPAA, it was all these privacy standards. We had to deliver those in places and companies and went over to Vistaprint, got my first taste of the startup world that had just gone public and now they had to do all these things. And I was delivering those programs. And you get that in place, get that to be part of our structure, make that second nature for us, not some hard activity. Delivering one thing is no different than delivering something else. So delivering a service is not different than a product and started to switch again years later into at Akamai, really working in the program management space and delivering for them everything from new policies and procedures on how we deal with incidents. An example, we found the bug in the code that we need to fix because this is a major gap from a security standpoint. Two, we noticed that people scrape websites to sponsor their website. So let's figure out some sort of solution that'll prevent scraping and prevent the rise of bots. I was able to deliver bot managers. From there, working in M&A as we expanded and bought other organizations and made our products and services better, just kind of consistently seeing things grow. So with that, I was growing, right? First, I can understand how things work and where they work and why they work. Then I can test if that's true. Then I can deliver a version of that. And finally, going into LogMeIn, doing M&A work initially as we built out this larger organization back in 2017, going from 400 million to over a billion once that deal closed, it was, wow, we have this massive organization and we've got some stuff. We've got over 12 products. They sell all over the world. And for those that don't know, what does LogMeIn do, right? For context, LogMeIn allows you to work from anywhere. We create a series of products and services that really keep you connected no matter where you are. Things like GoToMeeting, GoToWebinar, all the way to LastPass. all about making sure that your experience, whether you're home, on a beach, or in an office, is equitable and is engaged in the same way. So as we were doing that, we noticed that our products were 12 years old on average, and they were still growing, but pattern, they were on that downward trajectory or some more like middle, top of the line, were pulling in the value. Yeah. And my boss at the time was like, hey, I want to do this thing around innovation. And at that point, I knew it was a buzzword. And I went into it saying, okay, that's a buzzword. But at core, it's no different than delivering a project that everybody knows. You want to build this function. And I said to him, straight face, I said, well, I'm interested. I mean, we might all be looking for a job in a year, but I'd be interested to do it. And that's what led me down the innovation path and eventually to here, taking steps since that. But you know, happy to keep talking.
No, I love it. And I mean, I think it's so unique. There are very few people that I've talked to that have come from the auditor side or the really understanding the financials and the nuance of business and performance that then transition over to the innovation side. And your comment about, you know, we want to try this innovation thing and you're like, oh, I don't know if that's going to work. I read this great, I think it was Harvard Business Review a couple of years ago, an article about people's gut reaction to the word innovation. And you have these people that immediately it sparks growth and, you know, trying new things and very positive. And then like the vast majority of people in business organizations, it's like roll their eyes and groan that it's like distraction. It is going to, you know, weight down the organization. And it's something you have to do, but, you know, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, essentially. So curious what your experience was as you sort of moved into this innovation role. And if your perceptions of innovation overall changed.
I'd say they definitely started with the latter and came into the former, but then eventually came back to the latter. It was a balance, right? As I said, I went into it knowing that it was a buzzword because at the time, the other buzzword was, of course, blockchain. So I was like, if you throw innovation or blockchain or diversity onto anything, it's like, oh, let's talk about it. It's so important. And go with that mindset, I really wanted to see, well, why do people feel like that? Right, to your point, half of the people are all excited about it. The other half are like, I don't know. And what I did was I went and sat with every one of our executive leaders who were funding things like our hackathon in years before and just said, what was your goal here? What were you trying to do? And I had one side of the house that was more on the product side. We're all about, it gives our engineers a chance to do stuff. They really get excited and we see all these cool things. And it's really impressive to see what they do. And then I'd ask the question, so what do you do with those things? And so, well, you know, some of them come into the product. So, well, how many come into the product? Well, I don't know. Let me get back to you. Or there's a list somewhere, or there's definitely one that I can think of. Then I would ask the financial side of the house and the marketing side of the house. And they'd say, you know what? It's cool. I can't say that it's not cool. And it's a great event with regard to the hackathon. And it's exciting to see the people get together. But if we're trying to do something that's just going to get people excited, there's probably a more effective way to do that, to get people together and get them engaged than the hackathon. Because while that's cool, it speaks to a specific group and it, what becomes of it? I think we get people excited and then nothing happens. And that's what I saw. So people get all excited. There's a crazy weekend and we're eating pizzas at 2 a.m. and delivering all this cool stuff. We present it and then it dies in the vine. A week later, everybody's back to what they're normally doing, which speaks to exactly what you said. One half is all excited. I want to build something new. The other half is like, oh, I guess we have to do this. There goes, you know, $500,000 to fly people around. And then what do we get out of it? So with that, taking a step back and saying, okay, know your customers, right? So how do we solve for them? I said, if we're going to do this, we're going to run this like I would run a project. And a project means I'm going to be open with the communication. I'm going to find who needs to know about this. And we're going to pull them in from the beginning, because I think with a lot of innovation, it's all cool and sexy, but it becomes all us versus them. We're the cool kids that go get to work on innovation in our cool space away from everybody because they want us to be free of the culture and create something new. So everyone on the other side says, well, that sucks because we still have to deliver for our customers and our products and our financial statements. And you guys get to do what you want. Creates an animosity, creates kind of mistrust. I broke that down. I said, no, this is LogMeIn's innovation space. Anyone's able to come here, hang out with us. We happen to sit here and we do this day in and day out. But if you've got questions, if you're interested, you want us to work with you on something, come on in. We're more of a consultancy in that aspect. We will help you think like we do if our thinking helps you. Second, we'll go build stuff on our own in here because we have the resources. And for context, I had a product manager, an engineer, a UX designer, and a marketer as part of the team. That was the core team. We worked as an independent product development chain. We would find from the start which one of our business lines or product lines this idea will eventually sit in or we feel like has the best match to. And we want to make sure that those people are involved from the beginning. Why? Because we're not a scaler. Like, we're just going to come up with an idea and prove that it works and show you that it's worth investing in. But we're not going to scale it. We're going to have to hand this off to someone. And that someone needs to be ready to catch. I'm in Boston. So if I'm Tom Brady and I'm going to pass that ball down the field, you best believe that Julian Edelman needs to be ready to catch it. Otherwise, it's just going to hit him in the head or fall to the side. And it's not on him because he wasn't looking at us saying, oh, you're ready and I'm ready. It was just me throwing lobs out there. And I think a lot of people go into innovation and just become this idea spewing factory or these concept factories, which is great. But then everybody on the other side is like, I got a day job that I still have to do. And I have not been incented or given time or told in some respects that I should be expecting these things and I should help take them to the finish line. So it, for me, it was building that connection. And that's what helped me understand, oh, this could be growth, but it's not like free growth. It requires work and it requires relationship building and it requires understanding their aspects and the benefits of having been an auditor, understanding how the business really works to tie in where the value of this idea could be.
Love it. I think the us versus them relationship is so prevalent. And you're right, right? It's like a Skunk Works group of the cool kids coming up with really breakthrough things that aren't necessarily rooted in the business and then gets hand off to the people that are forced with delivering a quarterly KPI. And they're like, what do you want me to do with this? Like, I have 80 other things I have to do. And this is left field.
Yeah. I think a great example of that, and we never thought about this, but early on was we came up with this cool idea we call it Lockbox, and we have LastPass password management. Lockbox is a similar concept in that we said a lot of people use these things for password management, but maybe there's other things that you want to save that aren't exactly passwords. Think passports or IDs. If anybody's seen the new iOS 15 post around like now starting to keep your driver's license or other IDs in iOS, that was an idea we had. We're like, oh, is things digitized? Sometimes you just need this type of information. Again, not a password. I don't need it all the time. But when I need it immediately. Think I have to register my kid for school. And what do I need? The social security and immunization number. And now I'm on the phone with my partner like, oh, do you have this? Can you find that in that drawer somewhere? What if you had it in one space? And we were able to build it out and get traction and go from, I think, from zero to over 1,000 customers within the span of 2 weeks. Like, we put it out and it started to hit. People really, really liked this concept. On top of that, they started saving passwords in it because it just was like, oh, I start saving stuff. So we saw it as a natural transition in a LastPass. We were ready to hand it off and we'd pull them in. And I remember the GM at the time was saying, I'm really excited about this. And I agree, you guys have found something. But I don't have a team to stand up behind it because I have these other priorities. And as much as I would want to go after this, I just can't. It's a function of resources and time and the other commitments that we have. And to the point you made earlier, we were a public company at the time. I got quarterly earnings that are driving a lot of my decisions. You know, so these are the types of things that sit on the wayside and someone else gets to pick up because they were in the right place at the right time.
Well, first off, I love that idea as a product. I have a, I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but I have a document that's basically stuff I forget. That is, you know, everything from when I fill out a W-9, right, to get paid by another company. And I'm always like, oh, what's our EIN number? You know, like, I know it kind of, but it's not my social security number. So I don't know off the top of my head. And so I love it as an idea. That's a great example. So let me kind of take that down a notch. On your LinkedIn, I pulled a quote from it that says, you're able to look at customer problems and business initiatives through a strategic lens, not only seeing the immediate potential value, but also the longer term potential impacts to the business. So along this sort of public company quarterly bonuses, how do you give innovation a chance in that sort of larger corporate environment?
Yeah, I think it's two things. And I learned this from a colleague who really helped me out there. Breaking the model of how you think about innovation. I mean, there's innovation comes in two schools, right? It's I'm going to go create something net new. Nobody's seen this. We're the first ones. It's amazing. the IoT snow globe that I can tell to, you know, blow, and everybody's like, oh, this is so cool. A lot of times those things are ahead of when people are ready for them, or you don't just know what to do with them. So the company shelves them, or they give you a space to go work on that. And that becomes a lot harder. Then there's also, let me just look at what we're already doing and let me put a different lens on it to see if, could we do this? Like, what does it hurt if I try to eliminate this piece or go with that piece? Which is almost the classic consultant's process reengineering, but with the innovative lens of, let's look at this process and design sprint it and see, you know, what could we move around? And a lot of times that school of thought is much easier to get into a business because you can see those immediate gains. So my sense of looking at it strategically was always, how do I balance the ability to come up with something that's H3, like really far out, 3 to 5 years, doesn't make sense now, with something that's going to make an impact in their roadmaps today? And I came up with a model of, let me work on things that are tangential to my existing roadmaps. It wasn't all just net new, blue sky, greenfield, because net new, blue skies are very scary and doesn't generally fit. Tangential to the existing roadmap, you can see where the plugs in are right from the start. And it gives you the Clay Christensen, you know, let me find a new customer, an entirely new customer for my existing product. And that, for our leadership team, was just much easier to swallow. Like, they could get behind that and get the sentiment and sense of it and see it in their terms. So they understood, oh, if I make this investment, I'm going to see this financial return, because they've already showed me customer interest and growth and retention. That's what makes the most sense. If I'm going to present something new, or as I say, I can present you all the new things in the world every single day, but I need to present those to you in a familiar construct so that you are like, oh, I get that. And now I like this. Because if I just throw new stuff at you, you may not get it. And you're just going to like, yeah, that doesn't help me right now. Even if it's the coolest thing in the world. I think this is why a lot of investors started down the path of, this is the Uber of X, or this is the Airbnb of this thing, right? So people get that concept and then they apply it to what you're trying to do. We just took that on a smaller scale and said, this is the same as, you know, you need to grow this market by 10%. I'll get you 5 of that. We're just going to go this way. Here's how it makes sense. It requires this new thing, but I promise it ties back into where you're going.
Yeah, I love it. I saw a cartoon or a sketch, I don't even know how to describe it, years ago, that was basically somebody shooting hoops in their backyard and said jump shots instead of moonshots. I always thought that was a very interesting way to think about this, is like the, you know, horizon 3, 5 to 10 years out, Jetsonian future, right, is super exciting. And like, that is where there's, you know, really disruptive, industry shaking type of moves that happen. But like, man, that's hard to get done. Yeah. And even if you do get it approved, like, it takes, you know, 5 to 10 years. So it's like, you kind of have to have the quicker wins, or the wins that tie more obviously to the business. We had the CEO of Rosetta Stone on the show a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about this, like, the hunt for certainty, right? That like all the C-suite, like, if you put a dollar in, you want to know you're getting $3 back, or you want at least data that can show why you made this decision to put the dollar in. And that's, I love that you're kind of thinking about it that way. It's like, okay, here are your goals. Here's innovation that can get you to your goal faster, more efficiently, or differently. And that's easier to sign off on, right?
That point you just made on how the C-suite looks at things was definitely something that informed me in how we started speaking about it, because language is the biggest key here. If I just start throwing around problem fit and product market fit and solution, and they're like, I don't talk that language. Tell me what I need to know. And one of the things that I learned from them was, as we're a public company, there's the street plan, there's the management plan, and then there's the sales plan. And they're all of different levels of confidence and different levels of risk. And our model became, I want to get you to a point where I can get you 80% confidence on a management plan commit, which means, yeah, you're not going to tell the street you're going to do this. But if you start making some bets against it, we are confident that it'll get you the customers and it'll get you the traction that you're looking for, because we tested it in the same ways that you would, except that we can test it faster because it's more compartmentalized and smaller scale. That really worked for us.
I love the distinction that Christian makes here between the different horizons of innovation. He mentions H3, that's horizon three. That is the far out moonshots. Whereas like an H1 would be the jump shots that I mentioned, right? Something closer to the business, more tangible. And H2 is that sort of adjacency. This is also often referred to as now, next, and new. And it's actually where we got our catchphrase, what's next now? Because next is sort of this far out Jetsonian future that people think of at H3. And what's interesting is as technology accelerates and everything's moving so faster, we believe that is moved into now. So things are actually happening faster. They are closer to impact than previously understood. And their ability to make a large impact is getting faster and more pronounced. You've studied innovation and disruptive strategy at Harvard, at Babson. You've done this as a practitioner, right? You've gotten out there. Is there any like big picture advice that you would give to fellow corporate innovators that might be listening? Is there one takeaway from all your thinking and time you've put on this that you would like to share?
Yeah, and there's three things. And I know those and I learned these through my own career. Also, I think Babson's program is really good here. One, you need an executive sponsor that is part of the executive team. Don't get buried. I was like, oh, we're under the CIO who's under the CFO. It needs to be at that level who's direct line to you. Why? Because that means you'll continue to be in the conversation and you will have access to the other leaders on a more regular basis without having to claw your way through people. Two, you need to have metrics for your organization that you are public with within the organization. So look at yourselves like an emerging business unit and how are emerging business units measured. It's not really on revenue because you're so young in the game and your $1 million, as an example, is going to be minuscule to someone who's doing 200, 300, you know, $700 million. But are you showing growth in customer acquisition? Does that cost for you come down? And you repeat that funnel so that if somebody gives you a concept, you can take that pretty quickly and take it to the next level. And have that available for people to see and see in their language. And three, invest in the people that you have in the organization, specifically in your innovation group. One thing that is a common problem with innovation is that people burn out, right? You come in and you're so excited because again, if you're working on a moonshot, it's the cool, sexy thing to do. And you go work in that group for 3 years and now you gain all this skill set because you were a jack of everything, right? The innovation groups are super small and every person has to do everything. When you're done with that tour of duty, you often hit this wall of where do I go back to in the regular part of the business? Because my experience trajectory has been different than my career trajectory. Oftentimes a lot faster, almost exponential levels of growth than you would have had you stood in your regular role. And I think it's the same concern that happens with people who expat for a couple of years. Like once you're done with that expat assignment, you almost never go back to the company because you don't fit what you left. And so with that in mind, if you want to keep them with innovation, you need to give them a career path. And I think that's one area that is so overlooked and just not acknowledged that's why people leave or that's why labs break down because you have this core group of people who do amazing things when they're together. They've all grown significantly. They're looking for the next thing and you never planned for it. And the organization doesn't know where to take them. It's almost the same as the idea. We created this great idea. No one knew where to take that football. We created these great people more than anything who have this amazing skill set. We need to get them back into our business. We just never figured out where to fit them in.
Wow. That the last one is so interesting to me. I remember I started my first business and it did not end the way I had hoped it would. And so I had to re-enter, sort of go work for somebody else. And I remember my resume, writing it was the hardest thing in the world because it was like, I did everything. It was a small company. I learned marketing. I learned finance. I learned, you know, everything, product, creative, right? You wear so many hats in a small innovation group that's doing things in 90-day sprints. And then it's like, okay, well, what did you do the last 3 years? And it's very hard to explain that back into the sort of mothership. I think what's interesting too to think about if you invest in that sort of career trajectory is that then you have more champions of innovation spread throughout the organization. And that sort of like innovator mindset starts to spread, which helps the whole organization work faster and be more creative So I think it's a great thing, but I don't know of many people that think of it that way, that invest in what happens after that sort of tour of duty within the innovation group.
Yeah, it's an area that became very important to me. And I think it tied to kind of who I was from a diversity aspect, because I think the diversity conversation is generally around pipeline and how do I develop people to take leadership roles and move forward. And that's the same thing with people coming out of innovation. You go and you do everything, you get all these hats, you have all these experiences, and now you want to do something with that. And oftentimes you're still super invested in the company, but the skill match is not there. You can do so much more than they're giving you an opportunity to do. And it's just a misunderstanding. And that was one thing that I saw as I ran the group and as I tried to pivot and start to develop my team. It was what I ran into with HR when I was saying, well, pay scales aren't matching up. And how do we align what this person brings to the table versus whatever their peer would be in the more classic part of the business or core part of the business? And they're not one-to-one. And I can show you, and you've seen them present, and you can't tell me what they're doing is two or three levels above where they're titled. But because we haven't figured that jump out, no one wants to solve it. And it's not, those aren't all my ideas. I'd say I'm looking around because there's a book, Beyond the Champion by Gina O'Connor and Andrew Corbett over at Babson, to give them a plug. They made an impact in how I look at innovation, and I think they're looking at it the right way. It's all about the people. It's, as you said, innovation champions are kind of the easy part. People who love it and talk about it and want to support you, they'll put together the hackathon. They'll give you an opportunity. We came up with this award at LogMeIn. It was almost like the Farmer's Award. And why the farmer? Because innovation only happens if somebody is sponsoring you. Somebody is giving you a field for you to grow your idea. And we always recognize the innovator, but we never recognize those people who gave you that opportunity. That's cool. I looked at it and I said, I want to give recognition to those people, because that's how stuff happens, right? It was that VP in sales, or it was that senior director here who really bought on and was our advocate and champion to get in front of the right people and to give us that leeway. But in the same vein, you know, how do you make more of that? And how do you make it not just about champions, but just a core function of your organization? And doing that is saying, think of innovation as a rotation. I get them great exposure, and then I can use that skill set to accelerate our business as a whole.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. Well, Christian, I'm going to get you out of here on this. So one of the things we've talked about today is collaboration. It's obviously a big theme on the show. Can you talk about your point of view on looking outside of your own four walls, right, at a corporate level, looking at startups or external innovators to add to what you do internally? Just curious your perspective on that.
I think it's a great way to do it. I think if you look at it, everyone thinks they have the most innovative org, and I'm sorry to say that's not the case. If you're a 1,000-person organization, there may be one or two people in there that are truly innovators. And then of those two people, maybe only one of them wants to do it within the four walls of your organization, because I think everyone ignores the fact that some of the excitement of innovation is the risk and the opportunity gain that you could get if this hits. Not everybody has that risk profile. But those that do are going to want to do that. So they won't bring those ideas forward within your four walls, and you may never hear about them. I think partnering externally gives you access to a lot of the great, you know, a lot of bright minds with different cultures and mindsets and thoughts and routes to market that you're not going to have. It removes that requirement on a quarterly basis to report on financials because you're investing in other areas. And it gives you a chance to see what your competition is a lot earlier than you would have at the point that they're ready to compete with you. Because oftentimes, you know, investing in people who are doing the same things that you are doing could give you a chance for an acqui-hire or an MA in the future, or just kind of an investment strategy. Like, hey, we're never going to buy you. That's not our intention, but we'll see where you go. You're going to prove out markets for us and you can prove it out faster because you're smaller, you're way more nimble, you're still operating with that large startup mindset. So again, I think going outside of your walls is super important. Just have a system to do it and be serious about it. Don't make it a side project in one group just trying to push it. Make it part of your core product strategy. Make sure product understands that that's there and that you can pull in those learnings So you're not making investments and not getting the value, which means a year later it gets cut because the person who was running that moved on to something else.
Yeah, I love it. That is great advice on so many different levels. So Christian, where can people learn more about you, follow your work?
So you can see me on LinkedIn. I tend to post kind of all of my ideas all over the place. I'm also a professional photographer. So that's the stuff that generally comes out for me. Instagram, Twitter, and my website are all the same. Artofchrisponce.com and Instagram and Twitter without the .com. So you'll see kind of where my view on the world is through the images I take, but also in terms of what I'm talking about. I'm not doing innovation day in and day out. I kind of focus my time on working with boards and trying to bring that innovative mindset. So I sit on Babson's board for executive education and how we do that, you continue to learn, but also hoping to join Casa Mina Vasquez, which is all about domestic violence and the realities of that. And those are the areas that no one likes to talk about, but there's so much more you can do around making that accessible, especially the communities that I grew up in and I'm a part of. So
I love it. Well, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, Fred, it's been a pleasure. I'd be glad to come back. And if anybody feels this is interesting, happy to talk to you.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Please hit subscribe so that you can stay up to date on our latest episodes that are coming. And also check us out over at LinkedIn at Venture Fuel, all one word. We're always dropping our upcoming events, our features on different innovators, as well as emerging technologies and startups. So I think you'll really enjoy it. Again, Venture Fuel at LinkedIn. Until next time.